Today's shiur in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Lamed. We're beginning about the third way down at the two dots, which is about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. And we begin discussing certain types of absorptions. They're called blios that can be inside a container. These could be treif absorptions, isser absorptions, and here we're dealing with chametz absorptions. So a person is going to be using pots or other utensils that have chametz inside of them. Are you allowed to use them for Pesach? Or, obviously, if you can't, can they be kashered? So we need to know some basic dinim about blios. Blios, again, are absorbed inside the pots or the pans or the utensils, and different types of material have different types of ability to absorb and also different types of ability to be kashered. So today we're going to be dealing just with two, and that is earthenware utensils, kli cheres, which absorb very well, and the absorptions never really can come out. That's why it says a kli cheres, the only way you can, quote, kasher it is by breaking it, yeshuvar. Utots, it has to be broken, as opposed to metal utensils, which we'll be talking about limited amount today, and they can be kashered with the way that the blia went in. That's the way the blia goes out. Kibolo kach polto. Whatever heat was used for the blia to get inside, so that same amount of heat can go and remove the blia. There are two opinions, either it destroys the blia or it pulls the blia out. In general, the more heat that you have, the higher level of heat, the more that the absorption goes in. Obviously, you need at least that same level of heat to go take it out. And the different ways that you can kasher something, as we just said with klicheret, sometimes the only way you can kasher it really is by breaking it. That's the only way that it becomes no longer a kli. Obviously, you can't kasher it. We'll talk a little bit about where and how you can kasher a kli cheres with metal utensils. So if you put them in directly on the fire, you have to take it out directly on the fire. If you use a liquid medium like cooking, so then you just have to pull it out with the same hot water, that's hagola. And if you put in something cold, you just have to clean it. It doesn't get absorbed inside of it. You just have to remove anything that's on the surface in general. So that's a very quick overview. And now we can start looking inside the Gemara. Again, we're starting 10 lines to the top. Lamed, Omud, Aleph, with the words, Omar Rav. Rav tells us, Kideros beset bePesach. If you have chometz inside kideros, in other words, you use these pots all year long, and now you want to use them on Pesach, so there's no way to do so. The chometz is absorbed inside these kli cheres. And the only way you can use them on Pesach is if you destroy them. Yishavru. You have to go and break them. Rashi explains in Dibur Masko Omer Rav, Kideris for Pesach Yishavru. So Rav L'taymei, Rav goes according to his reasonings, which are twofold, as we'll see. And Rashi will point out, we don't pass like either these two reasonings of Rav. But Rav says, the Omer, Chometz Afli Achar Zmano Osur Bahano, Kereb Yehuda. We learned in yesterday's shiur that Rav's shita is that chametz has an issur d'oraisa on it after Pesach. Rabbi Yehuda has the three different psukim, one he uses for before the zman of Pesach, from chatzos until shkia, one he uses for the issur of kares, the lav of kares on Pesach, and then he has a separate issur d'oraisa lav after Pesach. So therefore, these blios are also even after Pesach. We'll see that this is important. And he also holds, as we learned in yesterday's shiur, the yisle b'mashu. He holds, we had Rav and Shmuel say, that even a mashu of chometz, an issa daraisa, is going to be osir something, even though there's no nosing time, even though you can't detect its taste, but even a mashu of something is osir when it's dealing with an issa daraisa. So this is what Rav's shitas are. Now, he also holds the kesavar, no same time lufgam is osir. Now, there's another rule that only blios that impart a positive taste, a good taste, that's called no same time lushvach, and that is by definition a blio within 24 hours of going in, will impart a positive taste. After 24 hours from going in, the taste is already considered somewhat spoiled. It's going to be a negative taste, what's called no same time. It gives a taste, lufgam, for a negative, for a deleterious type of effect on the utensil. But Rav holds, even though it's no same time, lufgam, it still is also, it's chametz, even though it's imparting a bad taste after 24 hours, it is still considered osur. So these shitas are Rav's reason why Rav tells us the kederus on Pesach yishavru, because there's no way you can use it on Pesach, and you can't even use it after Pesach, because the isser inside is still going to be there, an isser. And even though it's been there for a very long period of time, it's more than 24 hours, obviously, nevertheless, no sin tam lufkan, Rav holds his osur. That's Rav's opinion. Rashi points out, we don't passel like this. Less hilchos or kavase, we don't passel like Rav up here, for several reasons, Mitrei Tami, for two reasons. Number one, Chada, the Okay Rava Hilchasa, that we paskin over here, like Rava had said yesterday, the taruvas li achas mano mutter ki Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that there is no issa deraisa. The whole thing was a knas de rabbanon, and that knas de rabbanon was never set up for a taruvas. And here, the blios v'hai pachos mi taruvasu. This is even less than a taruvas, a mixture of real chametz with things that are permissible. So that was a real taruvas. And we said, as long as it's not the majority, so we paskin, Rava said, like Rabbi Shimon, to say that that knas was only instituted for chametz be'en. Real chametz that you have, and not a tyrovis of chametz, and certainly not a bli of chametz. So, therefore, according to the way that Rava said that we paskin, like Rabbi Shimon, Rav's din after Pesach wouldn't apply, and therefore we'll see inside in the Gemara the nafkamina here. Number two, va'od, the kaimalot, we don't paskin like Rav that no sein tam lufgam is osur, we paskin no sein tam lufgam is mutter, and therefore this certainly, misha avro lov yimei ha-Pesach, the last time Chometz was in here was before Pesach. Now the entire Pesach has gone through, definitely hufak tamo b'dofane ha-kli. It definitely has deteriorated the taste, has spoiled, it is definitely Lufgam after this length of time, and therefore we don't paskin like Rav, we paskin no sein tam lufgam is mutter. So in any event, that's what Rashi says is the explanation why Rav says kederos bepesach yishavu. The Gemara says, but how come? I've already answered it by going through the Rashis, but the Gemara is asking over here, Vamai, why does Rav say that the only thing you can do with this kli that has chametz in it before Pesach is to break it? Vamai, lashinu achar Pesach, leave it for after Pesach. Okay, you can't use it on Pesach, leave it for after Pesach. V'levid b'hu shelo b'minan. Why don't we allow you to use it with something that doesn't have the same taste? So let's say there was a chametz stick, a taste that went in there, so now use it with something that's not that same min, use it with an eino mino, and therefore it's a min, be'eino mino, achar Pesach. So Rav had said yesterday that that is fine. Min b'she'eino mino after Pesach is good. Rav said we don't make a gzera min b'she'eino mino after Pesach for min b'she'eino mino during Pesach, which itself was a gzera of min b'she'eino mino during Pesach for min b'mino during Pesach. So Rav said that's too much. We don't have to make that gzera. So don't make it over here as well. So Gemara says, no, we do make it over here, gizera, dilma osu lemevad b'hum b'mino. Because if we allow you to cook over here with this pot, min be'eno mino, here we do make a gizera, that then you come to cook it min b'mino, which Rav would say is also for the reasons that we said. So how come over here we do make the gizera? And yesterday we said, by taruvus we don't make the gizera. So Tosos, in the little Tosos, Dibra Maskel, Dilma explains, Le'el lo gozer, and yesterday's year, as I said, we didn't make that gzera, shelo b'mino or t'mino, because d'ha lo shchiach shi'is ariv lo chametz, because that's an unusual situation that you can actually mix the chametz stick item with non-chametz stick items. However, hocha, in this case of cooking, lahati levashel behen, yeah, once you're using this, utensil a lot, as opposed to a mixture. Who says you have to mix something together? Here, this is a utensil for cooking. And once you cook min b'she'eino mino, there's a more likelihood, higher likelihood, that you're going to go and cook min b'mino as well. Therefore, Rav today makes such a gzera, as opposed to with the taruvus from yesterday, he didn't make such a gzera. This is Rav Shita. Shmuel disagrees. Ushmuel amar lo yishavu. If you have the kderos that were used before Pesach for chametz, so you don't have to go and break them on Pesach. You can't use them on Pesach, but lo yishavu, you don't have to break them. But you can't use them on Pesach. I will mashilu li'achad zmano. Wait till after Pesach, and then you're allowed to go and use them again. Even though this was chametz she'ovel of Pesach, he says there is no problem over here. For ovid b'hu bein b'mino bein shelo b'mino. After Pesach, you don't have to be concerned about these blios, because he holds that no sein tam lufgam is mutter, and therefore there is no concern. Shmuel Lushitaso had said yesterday that we don't make any gezeros on the chametz she'ovel of Pesach in terms of taruvus. You can even do min b'mino and min b'she'eino mino, and today he won't make a gzera over here because there is no iser. He holds like Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon says that there is no iser deraisa here, and by the iser derabanan we don't make such a gzera. Gemara says, v'av az the Shmuel tamei. And this reasoning that I just said, Shmuel put into halacha l'maisa practice with the following story. Shmuel told the people that were selling kandei. Kandei, Rashi says, are kideros li'achar ha-Pesach. People needed new kideros after Pesach. Now, we'll see, this is talking about in the shtot, in the city of Rav. So therefore, you're dealing over here with Rav's town, and therefore, Rav had paskin that you have to break these chametz dikakelim, you can't use them after Pesach, certainly can't use them during Pesach, and therefore there was a need to buy new kelim after Pesach. People needed new earthenware utensils after Pesach. And therefore, Shmuel told these mizavne kande, the people that would sell these new kederos of earthenware after Pesach, and he told them, listen, you either set the prices properly, ashrei, even out, right? We have Ashvei Gumos, even out the holes. We have this more in Shabbos, more in Erevin. So Ashvei Gumos, so Ashvei Zvine, level out your prices, a kandayochi, for your new earthenware pots that you're selling. Otherwise, ve'ilo, if I see that you're trying to price gouge over here, darshina lechu ki Rabbi Shimon. I'm going to tell everybody that we pass along Rabbi Shimon, like my shita, and therefore, I'm going to tell people that they can use the pots that they had before Pesach, that were chametz dikapath. They couldn't use them on Pesach, but gizun pei, like we do, you could go use them after Pesach. People don't buy new pots after Pesach. They don't really sell their pots. You don't have to sell the blios inside of the pots. They're not considered substantive. You're not allowed to use them on Pesach, but after Pesach, Shmuel says, I'm going to tell everybody, you can continue to use your pots. So if you start to price gouge over here, I'm going to tell everybody that the halacha is that we pass it like Rabbi Shimon, and you don't need to buy new pots. So Gemara says, why did he have to tell him this? Just say that we pass it like Rabbi Shimon, and end of the discussion. Then you don't have to worry about the price gouging. So Gemara says, V'lidrosh lehu, d'hosh Shmuel, k'Rabbi Shimon Sirule. Why did he have to tell him? All right, you better be careful and not price gouge, or else I'm going to tell you we pass it like Rabbi Shimon. We do pass it like Rabbi Shimon. Why did Shmuel say that? So Gemara says, I said this before, Asrei d'Rav hava. Shmuel had tremendous respect for Rav. Shmuel was noted to Rav. And he said, this is Rav's town. I don't go tell people what to do in Rav's town. Rav tells these people that they have to buy new pots. End of the discussion. But he did warn them, if you're going to price gouge, then I'm going to open my mouth. Shmuel lived after Rav. Rav passed away before Shmuel did. So Shmuel told them, listen, if you're going to price gouge, then I'm going to tell you that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, and not that you should follow the halacha of Rav, that he paskin that the kederos have to be yishavru. Now the Gemara tells us another din with blios. So, how tanura, there was an oven. Ovens, again, were made out of earthenware most of the time, although we see that we're going to talk about ovens that were made out of metal as well, which, again, have quite different rules in terms of potentially kashering them. How tanura, the tohu bei tichaya. In this oven, they had smeared it over here with tichaya. Rashi explains that tichaya is shuman, shenos nubo bekarkioso. They put in some of these fats on the bottom of the oven, the no same tam belechem, and it would add taste to the bread. It would give it a schmaltzy type of a taste to the bread. Now, this is fleishach. Shuman is fleishach. So they put these permissible fats inside the oven. Not talking about chalev. Obviously, they shmear it with chalev. Chalev is an iser kare. So we're not talking here about non-permissible fats. We're talking about just putting in fats, i.e., we're talking about making it fleishach. So the Gemara tells us that asara Rava bar Ahiloi lemechle lerifta. Rava bar Ahiloi told them, you're not allowed to go and eat this bread. It's fleishach bread, and therefore you can't eat it, period. Not even, never, of course, can't eat it with milk, but afilu b'milcha, even to eat bread with salt. They always had bread with salt. Nobody had plain bread. So they're talking about, Rashi says, nobody ate just plain bread. So they either put salt on it, they put some accompaniment on it. Lifta means something that comes with the bread, some sort of a spread or something like turnips or radishes or whatever they would put with it. So nobody ate plain bread. But you can't even eat it parva. You can't even eat it with parva items because it's fleishcha bread. Now, the reason behind this is because the halacha is, lemaisa, that you're not allowed to have milchik bread or fleishik bread unless it's clear that it's in the shape or in the way it's made, that it's obvious that it's milchik or it's obvious that it's fleishik. You're allowed to have a cheese knish. You're allowed to have a meat kreplach or a meat type of a knish because they're clear that they're fleishik or they're clear that they're milchik in the case of a cheese Danish. Because these breads or the pastry has a certain shape, a certain style to it, that it's clear that it's either fleishach or milchik. But a loaf of bread, you can't tell by looking at a loaf of bread that they made it with butter or that they made it with schmaltz, and that it's either respectively a milchik bread or a fleishach bread. And therefore, the rabbis said, unless there is a clear-cut physical appearance to the bread, or if you only make such a small amount that you can have it at one sitting, so then there is no concern that you're going to eat this milchik bread with fleishes or you eat this fleishik bread with milchis. But otherwise, if it doesn't have a clear-cut shape or you make a decent amount of it, that you can have more than that one meal, so then it's also, in fact, to go and make a milchig bread or fleishig bread. And that's what Rav Bar Eloi said. You can't even eat it with pyrava stuff because of the concern that you may come to eat this fleishig bread with milchigs. And this is true, he says, li'olam, this is forever. There's no way over here this oven can ever be kasher because it's an earthenware oven. So this fleishig schmaltz that you put at the bottom of the oven is always going to be there, even if you go and light up the fire and then let it cool off. So you would think that maybe you burned out all of the schmaltz. No, li'olam, it's always going to be awesome. Rashi says, afilu chozev uhusak, even if you went and rekindled the fire and you tried to kasher it, you can't kasher an earthenware oven. And the reasoning is, as I already pointed out, Dilma Osi Lamechle Bekuscha. Kutach is a famous milchika dish that spoiled milk inside of it. And this milchika kutach, you're afraid that you're going to dip the bread in this kutach. Again, they always had bread with something. And if you let you have it with parva stuff, you may come to have it with milchika stuff, and that would be a problem. That's what Rava Bar Ahiloi said. The Gemara doesn't like this. Gemara says, Meisve, you're an Amora. We got a Brisa over here that's going to disagree with you. The Brisa says, Ain loshen and so isa b'cholov. You are forbidden to go and baste the dough with milk. In other words, you can't go and mix in milk into a dough. Are you making it a milchika bread? Unless it again has a very set standard shape that everybody says, oh, that's a milchika bread. And if you did this v'im losh, then kol hapas kula asur. The entire bread is going to be asur. Why? Mipnei hergel avera. Because people eat bread all the time, and they're going to have this loaf of bread, and they're going to have a slice with their breakfast, and they're going to have a slice with their supper, and one is going to be milchus, one is going to be fleishel. So therefore, bread has to be parva. And therefore, if you made a milchik of bread, it is osur. That's what the Brisa says, b'nei hergel aveira. Fine, that doesn't disagree with what Rava Bar Ahiloi said. However, kayotzi bo, here's the part that disagrees with him. We turn to the Amud Beis. Kayotzi bo, it says, ein toshin esatanur ba'aya. One is not permitted to go and smear the schmaltz, the fat tail of usually a sheep. It's called the alya's tail. The alya means the tail, and the sheep's tail is a very fatty type of ingredient, and they would smear their ovens, again, to give it a nice schmaltzy taste into whatever they cooked in there. Now, if you're cooking what would have been otherwise part of a bread, you now turn the bread into being fleishes. And the imtosh, if in fact you did this, so any bread that you cooked in this oven now, kol hapas, kula, asura, all the bread that you make in this oven is now going to be forbidden, based upon the principle that we just said, that you're not allowed to have a fleishig bread or a milchig bread, unless it's clearly from its shape recognizable that it's a milchig or fleishig bread. So this is not, and therefore you can't eat such bread. Kol hapas, kula, asura. However, what can you do? Here the Brisa disagrees with Rav Bar Ahiloi now, Ashiyasik es tanur. But if you go and fire up the tanur with nothing inside of it, you'll burn out the schmaltz from the alya, and then the next time, after it cools off, the next time you'd be allowed to go cook bread in there, and it won't be fleishig bread. It won't make everything that you cook in this tanur fleishig. The implication of this price is, as I just said, if you would go fire up the tanur, you could burn out the schmaltz, and next time it would be acceptable. Miyoshari. And therefore, to yuftor, the Rav Bar Eloi. Rav Bar Eloi said that you're not allowed to go and ever again use this oven. So therefore, this price is to yuftor, the Rav Bar Eloi, to yuftor. We indeed slug him up. He's wrong. Ravina says to Ravashi, no, the itos of Rav Bar Eloi, since we just slugged up Rav Bar Eloi, am I come Rav Kderis Bezach Yishavru? So then why did Rav say that you're not allowed to go and use the chometz dika pots after Pesach? Go and kasha them. Go and put them in a fire and burn out the chometz from these chometz dika utensils, these pots, and then use them after Pesach as now purged from the chometz that was inside of them. So why didn't Rav say that? Am I come Rav? Why did he say you have to go and destroy them? So Ravashi answers Ravina, and he says as follows: Amalei, Hasam. He gives two terutz. So the first terutz is there's a difference. Here we're talking not about an earthenware tanur like we had said. Hasam tanur shel mateches. This is a metal oven. And a metal oven can be purged. All you have to do is kibolo kachpolto, the way the heat went in with fire. So you do libun, since there's open fire inside there. So you have to go and kasher it with fire. You do libun. So if it's a very hot amount, that's what's called libun gomor. If it wasn't as much directly on the fire, so then you can sometimes use libun kal. But you just take a blowtorch, you go and put fire in there, and you can kasher a metal oven. And Rav, however, was talking about hochabik derish cheretz. He was talking about pots that are made of earthenware, which can't be kashered. That's a very simple, straightforward teretz, very easy to understand. There's a difference between a tanur of metal and a pot of earthenware. Pots that are made of earthenware cannot be kashered. A tanur, an oven that's made out of metal, can be kashered. Very simple. Teretz number one. Teretz number two, the boy same, well, alternatively, you can give the following teretz. Hav ha b'shel cheretz. No. The tanur is also an earthenware tanur, and the pots of Rav were also earthenware pots. So how come the tanur we can kasher, according to everybody, according to this brisa, and yet Rav says that the pots have to be yishavru, you have to smash them, you can't kasher them? So the answer is, because the tanur is zeh hesekum mibifrim. The tanur has the heat on the inside, the fire is on the inside of the tanur, as opposed to the pots, you can't put the fire on the inside of the pots. We'll see in a moment why. The pots are tried to be kashered from the outside, and you won't be able to accomplish the same level of heat that you can get in a tanur into a pot. Because the tanur, the heat's on the inside, and it can burn out all of the chametz that's there. And therefore, by the tanur, if you heat it up, yasik is a tanur, and therefore it will be shari next time you've burnt out the blios of the schmaltzy alya, or the milchika stuff, whatever it is that you had in the tanur, and now the tanur is parva. But by the pots, the earthenware pots, where you're heating them up, trying to kasher them from the outside, so that will not burn out the blios from the inside. That's why Rav says the tanur, I agree with that, Bryson, no problem. And the pots, no tiyufta, that the pots cannot be kashered. Gemara says, okay, so then go and take the fire and do it on the inside of the pots, and this way it'll kasher them as well. So take the pots and don't just kasher them from the outside, put the fire on the inside. Take your actual coals and put them on the inside of this pot, and you'll go and burn out the chametz on the inside of the pot, and Rav should therefore not have to be yishavru. So the Gemara says, no, people aren't going to do that. Chayis alei mishum depaka. The inside of the pot, if you make it too hot, will smash the pots. And people are going to say, well, you know, I'm not really going to do Liban. I'm just going to put it there for a little bit, and I'll say I did it. They're not going to fully kasher it because they're concerned that if they try to fully kasher it, they're going to smash the pots. I'm wasting my time here, and I destroyed my pot anyway. So therefore, Rav was concerned that, well, technically, if you did put the heat on the inside, it would kasher it. People aren't going to put an adequate amount of heat on the inside. They're only going to do it to the outside and say, yeah, that was kashered enough. And in fact, it's not kashered enough. So therefore, Rav said, you can't kasher a pot, but you can kasher a tanur. The tanurs are built to withstand great heats. The fire is always on the inside. So therefore, the kashering of the tanur is possible, even though it's a klicheres. But the kashering of pots that are klicheres, people are going to be concerned that they're going to break if you put the heat on the inside, and they won't kasher from the inside, they won't kasher from the outside, and therefore Rav said, no, yishavru. And therefore, the halacha is in a similar situation. Hilkach, hay buchya. A buchya, Rashi tells us, is a kli, shehu meraofim, shekorim tiles, v'ofin umetaglin bo kikar. This is something that I'm not sure that we have anything equivalent to it, but maybe it would be something like a hot plate. And they basically had fire that they put on the inside of these tiles, not just on the outside. And you could, therefore, these tiles were much sturdier than a typical pot, and they would be essentially like an oven. So here, heisiko mibachotzu the aser. Normally the fire is on the outside, and therefore you wouldn't be allowed to go and kasher them with just the fire on the outside, and therefore the aser. However, v'maye gumre, but if you put the inside of these tiles and you put gumre are coals, so sharper dummy, then if you put the fire on the inside, you in fact can go and kasher it out. Why aren't you concerned chayis lemishum depaka? Why aren't we concerned that the tiles over here will break? No, these tiles are so sturdy, they're like the oven, they can withstand the higher heat, and nobody's going to be doing a poor job, a substandard job of kashering them from the inside. So, again, you can't burn out the blios on the inside by just putting fire on the outside. So that's the halacha across the board. By an oven as well, you can't just kasher from the outside. You have to kasher from the inside. The pots, you can't kasher them from the outside. But by the pots, we don't let you kasher from the inside because you're afraid the pokka, by these tiles, by this buchya, we're not concerned because they can withstand the higher heat. And imaya gumre, and if you go put the heat on the inside, shapadami, you can in fact kasher them. Now we deal with other types of blios in this situation. So Amalei Ravina Leravashi, Ravina says to Ravashi the following question. Hani sakine, knives that are used for chametz, and now you want to use them on Pesach. Bepischa hechi avdinon lehu. How are you able to use a chametz sticky knife? It was used to cut chametz all year long. It was used in various types of heat. For chametz all year long, how can you make a kosher Pesach? Sakine the pischa hechi adin alhu. How do you go and kash them? So Ravashi says to Ravina, on the lake, l'didei, what I personally do is chados for kavdin. I buy new utensils. I don't use the chametz sticky knives. I go and buy all new utensils for Pesach. So that's great. If you're rich, so Amalei Ravina says to him, great, Tenach, Mar, you, Ravashi, Devshalei, you're well off, you're able to go and do this, that's wonderful. What about the rest of the Hamonam, the Loevshalei, people that don't have the financial means to go and purchase all new utensils? My, what should they do? How do they go and kasha their knives? So Amalei Ravashi said, yeah, I wasn't myself, including myself in the rich people. And when I said that I, Lididi, Chadetza Kovinan, what I was saying was, Amalei, Ano, Ke'ein Chadetor, Carmina. It was like new. In other words, I kashered them to make them like new. Of course, you buy new ones, no problem. But I also kashered my knives. Now, how did he do this? Katayu, the handles, which cannot withstand the heat of the fire, I smeared them with betina. I put them in some sort of earthenware covering. I put like a mud pack around them. Rashi says, "Lahogin alam," to protect it from the heat that I'm going to put him into the fire. Shlo yisrafei ma'ar, because the heat would go and burn off these handles. The stump of the handles were not made of something that could stand the actual fire. Maybe they were made out of wood and they would burn in the fire, and then you'd be wasting your time trying to kosh them. You'd be destroying them. So I would go and put the handle in some sort of a wrapping of mud to protect it from the fire, and uparzalayu, and the metal part, the knife part, benura, that I would put directly into the fire. That's because I use them in hot during the year, so now I have to use them to kasha them in heat as well. So therefore, they were used in fire for chametz, so the blios get into the metal, but you can burn them out by putting them into the fire again. And the handle, I would protect, so it wouldn't get burned up in the fire, but afterwards, I have to kasher the handle. V'hadar, after I kashered the blade part, v'hadar, afterwards, ma'alina l'katayu b'roschen. I put the wooden handle into boiling hot water. The boiling hot water is not going to burn the wood, but it will get out any blios that were in the wooden handle. And in this way, Ravashi tells Ravina, this is how you kasher your knives. You go and put the metal part into fire, because they were used in fire all year long, and therefore you kasha the metal part that way. You protect the handle by smearing it in some sort of tina, some sort of mud, clay, so it doesn't get burned up in the fire, and afterwards you go and kasha that in boiling hot water, and you're fine. That's what Ravina was told. However, the Gemara says that Ravashi was a little bit machmir. You don't have to do what Ravashi says, but Hilchoso, the Gemara says, idi v'idi b'roschin. In fact, even the blade part doesn't have to be put into actual fire. It's adequate to do hagola, putting it into boiling hot water. But you have to have it in a kli rishon. Now, kli rishon could be understood in one of two ways. A kli rishon is a kli that was directly on the fire at one point in time. Now, there are those that say it still has to be on the fire if you use the knife in a kli rishon that was on the fire, so then you can only kasher it in a kli rishon that's on the fire. And others hold no, that as long as it's a kli rishon and it's still boiling, it doesn't have to be on the fire. Even if you remove it from the fire, but it's still boiling, the water inside of it is still boiling, so then that's an adequate hagola that you can go kasher stuff inside this boiling hot water. So the Gemara says that the halacha is not like Ravashi. You don't have to go and put the actual metal part of the blade of the knife into fire. Even though you may have used it in fire, you don't have to go and do this. A number of reasons why this may be the case. The simplest answer that Tosus brings down over here is based upon the concept that we say that the chametz that went in was technically heter, and therefore hetera bola. When you have chametz all year long, it's not iser. So therefore, the rules for kashering are a little bit more lenient when you're kashering something that's a heter item. When you're kashering your chametz sticky utensils before Pesach, so you're kashering heter. At that point in time, it's still heter. So therefore, hetera bala, and therefore you don't need to use the exact same level of heat that went in. You can use a lower level of heat. So even though it may have been in actual fire, hagala is enough. Not everybody agrees that. Some consider that it's called over here isura bala anyway, because you're right now it's not Osir, it had the chametz, but on Pesach, when you want to use this, it's going to be Isser. So it's only, it depends on what time of the year you're in. So it is called Isura Bola if you want to use this on Pesach. And therefore, they say that either they only used it transiently in actual fire, and therefore you don't have to be choshesh for that, or that maybe you didn't even use it there, and you don't have to be choshesh at all. Did you or did you not go and use it in actual fire? And therefore, it would be adequate. The Gemara says, the hilchasa, idi beroschen, and you don't need to go and put even the blade part into fire. Amar Rav Huna, b'reid Rav Yeshua, Rav Huna, b'reid Rav Yeshua said a very similar din. If you have eitz porur, Rashi tells us that eitz porur is shemegisim ba'akdera. It's some sort of a wooden spoon that you stir the hot cooked item in your pot. So you take this eitz porur, how do you kasher it? It has chametz mixed inside of it, or let's say it even had isser mixed inside of it. So magilo beroschen, it's adequate to just do hagola on it, put it into boiling hot water, and that water has to be ubu kli rishon. Either it has to be a kli rishon directly on the fire, or you took it off the fire, but the water is still boiling inside of it. And this is based upon the principle that I alluded to earlier in the shir, kisavar kibolo kach polto. Because Rav Huna, b'reid Yeshua, is stating this opinion the same way that the blios went in. That's the way the blios will go out. Kibolo, like it got swallowed up inside of it, so the blios are inside of it. Kach polto, they'll spit it out. They'll get the blios out by the same level of heat. So if you used it in boiling hot water, you stirred cooked dishes that were boiling. So in order to go and kasher this eitz parur, this wooden stirring spoon, so you have to go and put it into boiling hot water, either directly on the fire, that means b'kli rishon, or just in a kli rishon that was previously on the fire, but is still boiling. Now the Gemara asks, the gisa that we have is bo minei me ameimar. They ask from ameimar the following shaila, but the Bach says it really should be mireimar, not ameimar, but mireimar. So they ask mi mireimar. And we'll see in the Gemara going on, it's going to keep on referring to mireimar. That's why the Bach mistama changes it around. So they asked Mireimar the following shaila. Homani de konya. If you have over here utensils that are glazed, Rashi explains konya means that they have some sort of a earthenware utensil, shocheres, the toch be'aver, and it's glazed, it's plated with some sort of lead. Aver is lead. So these are glazed utensils of earthenware. So do we view them as earthenware utensils? Or do we say, no, that the glaze, that the lead on the outside prevents the blios from coming inside to the earthenware where it can't get released? And you just treat this like a metal keli, and it can be purged with fire, as opposed to an earthenware utensil which could not be purged with fire. So this is what they asked the Mareimar. These mani de kunya, they had chametz usage all year long, and now they want to know, can you kasher them and use them on Pesach? If they're earthenware, no. If they're considered like metal, then yes. So the Gemara says, it all depends on what the base earthenware utensil was made out of. There's certain types of earthenware utensils that are super absorptive, even through a glaze, and there are other types that are less absorptive, and the glaze will block them from absorbing. So the Gemara says, it depends. Yeroka, if you use this type of clay, Rashi says, asuyin mikarka shechofri mimenu tsarif alum, who oz ubolei aliolam, if it's made out of a certain type of earthenware, it has chemicals inside of it like alum, that are going to be super absorptive, and they'll be able to go and absorb even through the lead glaze around it, so then don't even ask the question. Yeruka, loti boiloch, because the vaday asira, they absorb. Rashi has the gears over here, the vaday asira, the mitzarfe uboli, that they mix together with the lead, the mitzarfe tsarif, and therefore they can absorb right through the lead. So therefore, the vaday asira, they're definitely good. So the only question is, kiti boiloch, the only question you can have about these mani de kunya is if they're made out of an earthenware that came from ukme v'chivre. It came out from either a black or a white type of a clay. My, then they don't absorb as well. So you could ask the question, does the glaze block the absorption into the earthenware utensil underneath it or not? And furthermore, v'heched isbu kartufni, if it has, Rashi says, bekoyim, if it has cracks in it, if it has some holes in the glaze, so then, also, loti boilo, the question doesn't get off the ground, because the vadi asiri, in that situation, they're definitely going to be absorbing through the cracks. Kiti boilo, so then the only question that we have over here about these mani de kunya is if they're made out of white or black clay, and they're definitely shi, they're shi, they're smooth. Rashi says, cholok, they're glat, they have absolutely no cracks in them, and therefore, you physically don't have a way for the chametz to get inside. And the question will be, is the chametz able to pass through the glaze on these white or black earthenware utensils that are made from this white or black earthenware material, and it's no cracks, can the blios get through this glaze or not? That's the question. The she, if it's nice and smooth, my, what is the halacha? That's what they asked the Mareimar. So Amalei, so Mareimar answers them. He says, Chazina lehu de midaisi. Go and look at these kalim. When you have something on the inside, you can touch it on the outside and feel it. So there's liquid that goes through from the inside of these pots to the outside. And therefore, Alma bole vasira. You can see that, in fact, they do absorb. And, in fact, it comes out on the other side. There's like a schwitz that comes out on the other side. They're wet on the other side. And, therefore, obviously, the blios went from the inside of the pot to the outside of the pot. Alma bole vasira. Therefore, it's no good. And the Torah tells us that a klicheres, the only way to kashu it is by breaking it, because you can never get enough heat on the inside, because you're afraid that, we said, chayis depaka, we said before, that, well, you maybe could put it in a raging fire and it would burn it out, but you're going to destroy the kli. So therefore, people won't do it that well. And therefore, the absorptions are always going to be in the kli cheres, and therefore, it never leaves it le'olam, forever. So Mari says, but how come in other situations we do allow to use a kli cheres? When you have yayin nesach, Dorish Mereimer, there Mereimer himself said that money dekunya, if you have these glazed utensils, and there it doesn't make a difference what the base earthenware component was made from, bein ukma, whether it was made from the black earth, bein chivri, the white earth, or even bein yiroki, even from this green earth, all of them, you're allowed to go and use them. Shari, it is perfectly permissible. So how come by these barrels or these earthenware containers holding yayin nesach, we do allow you to go and kasha them, as opposed to by the earthenware containers, we don't allow you to go and kasha them for cooking? So the Gemara says, what's the difference? So Gemara says, V'chitema, you're going to tell me, Yayin Nesach the Rabbanan, that this wasn't real Nisuch by Avodah Zorah, it's just Stam Yenam, and therefore the Yayin Nesach is only a Din the Rabbanan, and Chometz is a Din Daraisa, and therefore we have to be stricter on a Din Daraisa with the Chometz in the pots than we have to do by this Yayin Nesach, which is only a Din the Rabbanan, by the kegs of wine. Gemara says that's not a good teretz. Called the tikkun rabbanon ke'ein daraisa tikkun. We normally have a rule that when the rabbis set up a din, they set it up in the same pattern and the same general rules as a din daraisa. So if the rule is that earthenware utensils are no good, so if they're no good on the daraisa level, then the rabbis, if they say something is no good on the rabbanon level, will set it up with the same parameters as a daraisa. So therefore, you can't tell me, oh, yaines is only a din rabbanon, and therefore we can be makel. No, ke'ein daraisa tikkun. So it should be no good. So that's not a good answer. So Mereimer says, Amalei, no, because the real answer is Zeh Tashmisho Aydei Chamin. The earthenware pots are used on a fire with heat. Zeh Tashmisho Aydei Tzoni. But the pouring in of the wine, this Yayin Esach, into these barrels, so that's not under heat, and therefore the absorptions will be different. So therefore, in the Yayin Esach, it doesn't make any difference. If it's glazed, the wine will not get absorbed into the earthenware. All you have to do is rinse it out, and you're perfectly good. But with heat, the heat will get through the glaze, and therefore it is no good. That's what Mareimer told them. Nadigmor says, Amar Rava Bar Abba, Amar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, Amar Shmuel. This list of Amroim said the name of Shmuel. Kol HaKelim Shenishtamshu Ben Chometz Betzonin. If you use a regular utensil, it could be of any material, even including the Rabbeinu Chananel says over here, even if you're dealing with an earthenware utensil, so then no problem. It was only used by cold. All you have to do is rinse it out. Mishtamish ben matzah, just have to make sure there's no residual actual chametz in these utensils. They're only used for cold, so you just clean them out, and therefore you can use the mishtamish ben matzah. You can use them for matzah, i.e., you can use them on Pesach. They're not considered chametz. One exception. Even if it was only used for cold, you can't use this base or chutz min base or. What is a base or? So Rashi explains, this is kli sha'isha shore umunachas bo esas or. This is the actual utensil that a woman goes and places her sor. Sor is super duper chametz, the sourdough. Venos naso beisa. And she places this in her doughs. Upamim shushoa shom belaila. And she could leave it there overnight. So when you leave something overnight and you're using this super duper chametz, this sor, so therefore in this situation it can get absorbed even in cold, and therefore, hoel shechimutzo kasha, you can't use it on Pesach. Since this chimutz over here is so super strong, even if it's cold, it can get inside. Similarly, Amar Ravashi, Ravashi said, Ubeis Charoses. Now, Beis Charoses is the Dibra Maskil, Rashi is actually before the Beis Sor. The Rashis are out of order over here. The Beis Charoses is Kli Shinosnim Bo Chometz. It's a utensil that they would put in Chometz. The Chol Dover Sheishlo Kihui. And they would also put in things that are astringent, that are very sharp. Uregilin Litin Bo Kemach. And there, they would have this Chometz with this astringent material, this very strong material, for and they use this as a dip, but it stayed inside of it for a long period of time. And the flour became chametz because of this acid, this astringent material, this vinegary type of material. And this lashon charoses is a lashon of kihoi, that it has this material inside of it that has a very sharp, astringent type of material inside of it. So again, it's similar to the Beis Sor, that this is like super-duper chametz and can get it even if it's cold. So that's what Ravashi tells us. Well, Beis Charos says, Ki Beis Sor, the Beis Charos is the same halach as the Beis Sor, Shechimutso Kasha Dami, that it has the capability of getting inside even in cold. It's such a super-duper chametz, Shechimutso Kasha, and therefore it is going to be capable of even coming into the container when it's cold. Similarly, Amar Rava. Rava says also, Hani agane de mechozer. Rashi explains agane are arevos, troughs. These arevos that they use in the city of mechozer, that's where Rava was the Rav. Hoel, since, utedire lemelash buchamira. They would go and use the kneading of these troughs for chametz, and they would leave it in there, this so'or, for a longer period of time. Therefore, mashabu chamira, it stayed there for a long period of time. Kid Beis Sor, it has the exact same halachic status as the Beis Sor. Shechimutzu kosher, which is a very strong type of a chametz, and therefore it's chimutzu kosher dami. It's like having a ability to penetrate as well, like the Beis Charoses or the Beis Sor. These Agane de Mechuza, the Beis Charoses and the Beis Sor all have the same underlying principle that they're super duper chametz that can get inside even in the cold. Shmuel says, what is he adding? What is Rava adding over here? Why would we think that the Agani de Mechoza are any different than the Beis Sor or the Beis Charoses? Pshita. Shmuel says, no. Mal de Tema, I would have said on my own that Kivon de Revicha, since it's very wide, and therefore there's a lot of air that can get in over here. It's not a tight space. Shalit behu avira viloboli. The fact that it's very sharp can be minimized or mitigated by the fact that there's a lot of room over here, and the air can get in and prevent the bleels from occurring. That's what I might have thought. Therefore, Kamash Malon, Rav is telling us, no, that this is identical. Let's begin the next Mishnah. Nochri Shehilva Yisrael Al-Chemtzo. Here we're introducing a concept of whose ownership is something that is a collateral. Do we view the collateral as being owned at that moment by the person who originally owned it? Or do we say, no, if he defaults on the loan, it's going to belong to the person who was given the collateral, so we should view this collateral as already being in the possession of the person who was given the collateral. That's what the Mishnah is talking about. And the Mishnah is going to come across with the following principle, that we view it as belonging already to the person who it's given to, as if the loan defaulted. So Nachri, Shehilva es Yisrael al-Chemtzo. A Nachri lent the Yid money. He gave a Yid money, and the Yid gave him his chametz as collateral. Now, this was before Pesach. So, achar ha-Pesach mutu b'hanor. So, when the Jew defaults, many say that the default occurred before Pesach, so even though the chametz was still in the possession of the Yid physically, but it belongs to the guy already. And therefore, this is chametz shavas ha-Pesach in the possession of a guy, and achar ha-Pesach mutu b'hanor. On the opposite way of looking at it, v'yisrael, if a yid lent money to a guy, shilvas anachri, al chametzo, and the collateral was the guy's chametz, and the guy defaults on the loan, so achar pesach, also by not, it's considered already if it belonged to the Jew before Pesach, and this is chametz shavalas a pesach, even though it was in the possession physically of the guy, but it's halachically considered like it already belongs to the Jew, and therefore it is considered chametz shavalas a pesach, and it's also with hanor, like Rabbi Yehuda would be daraisa, like Rabbi Shimon would be derabbanon. Now the Gemara says, Itmar. What about the following case? Bal chov, a person who is owed money, and he has a lien on somebody else's property. So Abaye Amar, l'mafreya hu goveh. When the person defaults, so the collateral, the pikadon, is actually l'mafreya hu goveh. It's considered like it belonged to the bal chov from the time of the loan. We don't say it only comes now, but it's no. When we see that he defaulted retroactively, you say that he owned it at the moment that he was given the collateral. It's as if he bought it with the money. Rava disagrees. Rava Mar Mikanu Labogo, but we look at this as going forward. It's only from now when he defaults. So from today and onward, it's mine. But until today, he could have bought it back, Rava's going to say. So therefore, he paid me back, then it's his. So therefore, we don't consider the Baal Chov's possession until the actual time of the default. So Gemara says, Kol Hecha, the Akdish Lova, in a situation where the person who borrowed the money went and donated to Hekdish, this Pikadon, or the Zabilova, or he sold it to somebody else, so then, Kuli Amalo Pligi, the Osi Malvavatarv, everybody agrees that when the loan is defaulted on, that the Baal Chov can go and get it either from Hekdish or from the person that he bought it from. If he gets it from Hekdish, return to the Yomad Aleph. He has to go and redeem it back from Hekdish. He has to give him something because he can't ever take something out from Hekdish, even though technically it doesn't belong to Hekdish, but he can't take something from Hekdish without redeeming it in some way. Titnan, because there's a Mishnah in Arochin, Erchin, that tells us that Titnan, Mosif Odino, when you're redeeming something from Hekdish, even though that was a case where it was worth less than the amount of money that's owed to you. So you were owed $100, and this Pikot is only worth $90, so you're definitely entitled to get the whole thing back. So in this situation, you're allowed to go and take it back, but you got to give Hekdish something. Most of Odina, you give it one extra dina. The case there was it was worth only 90 mana, and you were owed 100 mana, so you just add on one dina, one mana, and then you've redeemed it from Hekdish. It technically belonged to you, but we don't want to ever take something from Hekdish without redeeming it. If a non-Hekdish person bought it, so then you just take it from him. You have a prior lien on it. So there's no machlokas over there between Abai and Rabba. So therefore, where is the machlokes? So by the Hekdish, you just go and take it. By the person who purchased it, you just go and take it. By Hekdish, you have to go and add on something. We'll pull this in the Chosim Eilu. Keep leaking. Where is the machlokes? The Zabin Malve, where the person who is the Baal Chov, he's the one that lent the money, he went and either sold it or the Kiddish Malve, or he made it into Hekdish. So Abaye says in that situation, Abaye Malam Afrehu Gove, since we look at it as if he owns it retroactively, it's a perfectly good sale and it's a perfectly good Hekdish. Kivan de Motos Mane Velo Pari, since if the loan were to become due and the person couldn't pay it back, so then the Baal Chov would in fact own it. So he Gloy Milsalam Afreya de Mikara Birshuse Havakai. So it becomes clear retroactively that in fact at the time of the loan he owned it and therefore he could go and sell it or he could go be Maktish it. Vishapar Hekdish Vishapar Zovin. And the Hekdish was a perfectly good Hekdish and the sale was a perfectly good sale. However, Rava disagrees. Rava Mar Mikanu Labogova. Rava says, no, it's only from now on that we view it as being his. Until now, Rava says, Kivan De'ilu Havalu Ziv Zuze. If the person had, in fact, had money, so have a Masalik Lu Bezuze. He could pay him back and keep his collateral. You can't do what you want with the collateral. The collateral is not yours. You haven't bought it. So Rava says, since if he had money, he could go and get his collateral back. So therefore, Ishtakach the Hashta Kokoni. It turns out that the Baal Chov is only getting it right now. He doesn't actually own it beforehand. It's only when the loan is defaulted. The loan is now due and he can't pay it. Now, Mikanu Laba, we view it as in the hands of the Baal Chov. But until now, if the Lova had money, he could go give back the money that he owes, that he borrowed, to the Baal Chov and get back his collateral. It's totally his. So this is the machlokas between Abaya and Rava. We'll discuss this more tomorrow's shir, but with this we conclude today's shir.